as I sit back and watch the NBA Conference Finals, I see all the storylines out there. If Zaza Pachulia is a dirty player, can Kawhi Leonard come back from the ankle injury and push the Warriors to a long series? Can the Boston Celtics give Cleveland any kind of resistance? If the Cavs sweep again, where will LeBron vacation next before the finals? Miami, Vegas, Mexico, Puerto Rico. But honestly, none of that matters. None of it. I really don't even care. And you know why? Because my family is in pain. And here at South Shore Ave, when one of us is down, we do whatever we can to pick the other one up. It's hard to see people or entities successful when you're down. You end up experiencing a wide range of emotions when you do. Anger, sadness, jealousy, and being petty as f***. I wanted to make sure that this person doesn't continue to experience the same kind of symptoms that I just mentioned. We can't have that. Not here. So today on the Av Podcast, this episode is titled Confessions of a Fan. I bring on past contributor to South Shore Ave and friend of the podcast and wounded soldier, Kevin W., as we spend the first part of the show letting him just express his frustrations of his team missing yet another playoff season and discuss the overall trials and tribulations of being a New York Knicks fan. Don't laugh. We don't poke fun here. Actually, you can laugh a little bit. Go ahead. To listen to more podcast shows and blog write-ups, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio. At this time, I'd like to have a moment of silence for the New York Knicks. And we're done.
Welcome to the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
No. Hold on. We got to change this beat up. It's too positive. It's too positive and uplifting for these guys right now. Listen, the beat has to match the content that we're going to be talking about here. Change this up. No. Hold on. We can do better than this. Listen. All right, let's start the whole thing over.
Welcome to the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Av Radio.
Today, my guest on the Av is a friend of the podcast and a past contributor to South Shore Ave. And more importantly, he's a New York Knicks fan. I know. You really should feel his pain, because I do. Which is why I want him to be free and let his pain go, at least for a little while, here on the podcast. Listen, you can't keep all that shit bottled inside, man. It's not good for your health or your skin, apparently. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the pod, please welcome Kevin W. back to the podcast. And Kevin, listen, I want you to know right now, it's a safe space here. We're here for you. It's family first, man. Family first. Double F, baby. Double F.
Is it like Switzerland? It's basically it's a free flare zone. Yeah,
I'm yeah. good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For the most part. Hashtag rep the fam. Rep the fam.
Thanks for having me back, Calvin, under these unique circumstances. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Listen. I want to make sure that my peoples are good. You know what I mean? In all aspects of life, whether it's financial, whether it's just regular, just want to make sure your mental state is great. And sometimes being a sports fan of specific teams can do things like raise your blood pressure and make you sad and make you mad and just do things to yourself or to somebody else, I should say. I just want to make sure that, you know, my peoples are good. That's the most important thing to me here.
Calvin, I'll say this. I'm in my 30s. Early, mid, or late, doesn't matter. I'm just in my 30s. And at this point now, as being a Knicks fan, I have to watch how much salt I put in my body for my blood pressure. I can't have more than one teaspoon and watch a Knicks game. Otherwise, I have to keep my Medicare card close. I can't take it. I actually think of all the seasons of being like, oh, I'm done with this team, this year is quite possibly the worst. The worst.
Do you have like a psychiatrist on retainer?
No, it's not covered. I tried to send the bill to Cablevision, but Dolan sent his goons to come rough me up a little bit. So, okay, no, then it didn't happen.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true. You might get tossed in your ass. That's true. I didn't even think about that. All problems always have a beginning. So here's the question I'll ask you, just to start it off, the genesis of it all. Where did your love start with the New York Knicks?
Started with my late Uncle Horace in 1992. It was Knicks versus Bulls in the playoffs. And I was in New York at the time. And I think it was like around Easter weekend or something like that. And it really feels like a therapy session to have you, Calvin. Anyway, honestly, we were just watching the game, and like, he was from, like, you know, being from Montreal and having family in New York, it was amazing. And then, like, to see, like, how the whole city was, like, behind the Knicks, but some cool people wanted to be for, like, the Bulls, because Jordan was coming up. But I just became a Knicks fan from then. Man, I like this guy, John Starks, that was guarding Michael Jordan, like, not giving him work, but making him work as best he could. And just the heart of the team. And then there was that guy with the flaring nostrils, the high top and 33 and the knee pads, Patrick Ewing and the garden and the grit, the guts. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was, I honestly hated the color pattern of orange, blue, and white. There was something about watching those games on NBC. Remember NBA on NBC?
Mm-hmm.
Doubleheader Saturdays, tripleheader Sundays.
Yeah, of course.
That is John. John Tesh's legacy, right? Like, exactly. It was, you know, it was Marv Albert, the Czar, the Telestrator, you know, Mike Fratello. And I was just like, yo, this team is all right. And I wanted to be cool coming up. I was impressionable. I followed the Knicks. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, they came close and they fell behind. Like, okay, next time we're going to get Jordan. And I was listening to, like, The Fan and, like, how the city was, like, talking bad about Jordan and the refs and the this and the Knicks. And I was like, okay, this has to be my team. It just became my team. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to root for the team for my favorite American city. I'm going to root for the New York Knicks. And that was the mistake of my youth, which has plagued me. I could have jumped on the Jordan bandwagon like everybody else, but I chose the wrong horse, and I stuck by it. And it's been plaguing me ever since. 26 or 27 years.
Right.
Of just heartbreak, ineptitude, nonsense, headbutts, you name it. Just playoff disappointment.
Sex scandals.
Copy paste Isaiah Thomas, Kurt Rambis.
Patrick Ewing, Gold Gym.
Why are you doing this?
Let me ask you another question. So, you weren't obviously around in the 70s when the Knicks were winning titles. You weren't even a thought of being conceived during those times. So, because obviously you never had a chance to experience your team winning a championship, what would you say was your best time of being a New York Knicks fan? Was it from the beginning, or was there other points in the 20-something years where you felt like you could wear that Nick jersey proudly, or at least the shoes, you know, the color coordinated shoes or whatever? Like, was there a time you could say, listen, this was the best time of my life in terms of being a New York Knicks fan?
You know what sucks? My biggest highlight in recent memory was Linsanity. A month in February. That's it. Other than that, great times to be like a Knicks fan were in the 90s when they were coming up. Another one of my favorite moments as a Knicks fan is when Jordan announced he was retiring.
Yeah, that was a good time. That was a good time. Even though they struggled to beat the Bulls without MJ, but You know, that's another story.
I think it was Hugh Hollins. I don't know if Tim Donaghy was ref in that game or not. I don't know.
Probably.
I know Hugh Hollins was there. But good Nick times, Calvin, were like the Patrick Ewing years when they were competitive, the fight, the grit of the garden. Listen, I know it was ugly basketball, but as a Knicks fan, there was nothing better than, you know, you probably weren't going to win the championship, but you're saving graces if you beat Miami. When Pat the Rat Riley left New York and went down to Miami, and then he built his version of the New York Knicks too, and like the teacher versus the protege, you know, Pat Riley versus Jeff Van Gundy, Patrick Ewing versus Alonzo Mourning, you know what I mean? P.J. Brown versus Oakley, like that back and forth was amazing. The series against the Pacers, I can't even say that was a good time because so Reggie came back and got us right after that too. And they made a 30 for 30 about it too.
That's true, but going back to that Nixon, them Heat series, you really enjoyed that?
I did.
Wow.
I did because it was like the ultimate in pettiness. It was so petty. These two teams were, you know, none of those teams were going to win the championship because Mike was waiting in the next round. But it's just to like battle against each other. I did like it. I mean, I don't know anyone. I know most people don't appreciate, you know, final scores of 51-49.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I did. Because there was something about like Dan Majerle, hating Dan Majerle's guts. Like I could name those players. Calvin, Jamal Mashburn, Dan Majerle, Bruce Bowen. You know what I mean? Tim Hardaway, Alonzo Mourning, P.J. Brown. And they gave us fits. They gave the Knicks fits. There was just something about the way they were coached. It was like the perfect, you could play that series over and over again, and it's like one team will win, and then something the other team will win. One team will win, another team will win. But it wasn't for everybody, which is why the NBA cleaned it up, obviously, got rid of the hand check rule because of a Nick, because of Derek Harper. But yeah, there was something about defense. When the Garden chants defense, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like Madison Square Garden chanting defense. They appreciate defense.
On the flip side of that, couldn't you say that maybe, you know, and I'm not trying to like stick it to you, of course, and asking this, but
Of course not.
I wouldn't do that. Couldn't you say that the Knicks kind of stole their swag from the Pistons?
Next question.
I guess they're not going to answer that question. Did they steal the swag? Because I'm thinking yes. You know, because obviously it worked. I mean, I understand why it worked, because the Pistons did go win back-to-back titles. And by the time they got older, like, New York was on the come up. Because it's a funny thing, as I remember those early Knicks teams, those teams were good. Like, they were good. They had a certain swagger about them, too, of course, because of Starks. I love Starks back then. And then you had the two bodybuilders, Oakley and Mason, and Charles Smith and Anthony Bonner and X-Man. He had all those guys on top of having Ewing. They didn't make the game pretty, I'll say that much. Like, because even those Pacers series, as good as it was, sometimes those games were hard to watch, too, even back then. Indiana was built the same way, right? They had a big center, Rick Smits. They had the Davis twins, Antonio and Dale. Reggie Miller, his game consisted of running through like 1,000 screens, bone-crushing screens, you know. and then the swag came from him and Mark Jackson. Right, so watching those teams too, yeah, maybe it wasn't 51-49. It was probably like 85-84 every time. You know what I mean?
That's right.
I did enjoy those Knicks too, particularly 92. It was kind of like a surprise that they came for Chicago strong. I think they were the only team that year in 92, if I remember correctly. I think they were the only team that year that actually pushed the Bulls to a seventh game.
They pushed them to seventh. Exactly.
Yeah, they got blown out in game seven, but I mean, we won't look at that type of history. Yeah. That's not part of history.
Hold on. Permission to speak freely. There is footage of in Chicago. Okay. And this is going to be a mini rant, but there's this footage about Michael Jordan's defense, apparently, where someone strips the ball and throws it up to Xavier McDaniel. And Xavier is like free for like basically a breakaway dunk, right? Or layup. But Jordan's giving him chase, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you know this highlight. And Xavier goes up, and Jordan rakes him from the back. Doesn't even touch the ball, but the ball goes flying out of bounds, right? clearly a foul on Jordan.
That looked pretty clean to me, but again, this is your Calvin, moment event.
Calvin,
so.
I paused it. Now, it's a mini rant, and trust me, that layup was not worth 25 points, okay? So it's not like the Charles Smith Memorial, which we could get to as well if you want. But you want to know something? Every Knicks fan knows this series of events. Smith blocked, game is over. You remember that?
I do, actually. I really do. That was awesome times.
Marv Albert made that call, and the Garden was like, we were just like, what the hell happened? He was right under the basket.
And then they had such a high, too, because, you know, earlier in that series, that's when, you know, they went up 2-1 on the Bulls, and then Starks had that dunk, that legendary dunk. You know, the literally the greatest moment of his career, crowning the entire Bulls team left-handed. Like, that's,
he made a poster. I had the poster.
Yeah, that's forever going to go down in history. You know what I mean? So, like, they started off on such a high. And then, you know, and then Jordan decided, you know what? F it. I'm just going to throw some 50-point games out here. And, you know, that became the end of that. And that was it.
Jordan and David Stern decided that, yes. Now, Calvin, quick question for you, if I may. It has been, like, 24 years. Was that a dunk on Jordan? Can you give me that?
No. So next question, right? So
Calvin, you said the poster.
It wasn't, you know what? It was more on Horace Grant. I feel like it was more on Horace Grant. Because to me, the way I look at it is being dunked on. Like, I feel like it had, like, you're literally going through that person to get to the hoop. That's, to me, my vision of being, like, my definition of somebody getting dunked on. And he didn't really go through Horace either, but if you're going to say somebody got crowned, it was definitely Horace. I mean, if you want to throw Jordan in the picture because it looks better, yes, he's on the poster. But Jordan was behind Horace. So he didn't jump through Horace, you know what I mean, and through Jordan to get to the hoop.
Forgive John Starks for going airborne and piercing the clouds and not taking the time to float himself closer to Michael Jordan. Jordan jumped. He got posterized. I'm not asking for a championship ring, Calvin. I'm not asking for a 25-point Xavier McDaniel layup. I'm telling you, give me the dunk, please.
Take the dunk. Just take the dunk. What was your worst moment being a New York Knicks fan?
In what context? Because there's so many. So please give me a context.
I don't even know which context, honestly, because
I'll give you some about that.
Any context. Let's just say any context.
Okay. So to answer your question, 1994, Patrick Ewing not setting a harder screen on Hakeem Olajuwon to free up John Starks for that three, which he tipped and blocked, and they went to a game 7 where Starks subsequently, I think, went 2-for-11 and lost the championship. Pat Riley not substituting John Starks out of there. Everything to do with Carmelo Anthony coming to the Knicks, gutting the team, forcing his way onto the team, basically, at the expense of all prospects and assets. Isaiah Thomas, part one. Isaiah Thomas, part two. Phil Jackson. Frederick Weiss.
Frederick Weiss didn't do anything. He didn't even play in the NBA, what, just because he got dunked on by Vince Carter?
He's associated to the Knicks, man.
Listen, man.
The taint is still there.
He stayed in France. I said he stayed in France. He probably did you guys a favor.
His only link to the NBA is that the New York Knicks selected him rather than Ron Artest. But the one guy that is, you know, part of the most epic dunk in Olympic history was somehow related to the New York Knicks. 1999, I'd say the finals run without Patrick Ewing. Then it came up head to head with the Spurs, and Tim Duncan got his first, and we lost because Avery Johnson was open on the left baseline and nailed a left-handed jumper and put the nail in the coffin for the Knicks, ending the season at Madison Square Garden. Carmelo Anthony trying to drive baseline and dunk on Roy Hibbert, of all people. Dude, the heartbreak is, there's so much. The Knicks losing to the Raptors in the first round. The Raptors' first playoff series win was against who?
Did that really hurt, though?
Dude, it was basically over.
I mean, oh, yeah, that's true, because they kind of dismantled the team after that. That's true.
It hurts. And you know what else hurts the most? The fact that the teams that are – people that are coming into this league have no idea about the pride of that was associated with being a New York Knicks. Franchises are created after the – like, have been created since, and they've had more success and prosperity than the New York Knicks have. Oklahoma City is wearing Knick colors, and they've made it to the finals.
Yeah,
the Knicks are a joke. It starts from the top. There's an inept management, leads to inept employees, inept decisions, inept product.
All right, so then, you know what? Let me ask you this then, because you're saying all this, right? So, listen, you've had many chances to jump off the bandwagon. When Starks went 1-for-18 in Game 7 of the NBA Finals, 94... The next year, when Patrick Ewing missed the layup against the Pacers in Game 7, when Pat Riley left to go to Miami and started winning immediately after, when they traded Patrick Ewing in, they didn't even give the decency to call him or tell him, and he had to find out on the radio while he was driving through New York. When they had Isaiah Thomas as a GM, when they signed Eddie Curry and Jerome James to multi-million dollar contracts, when they decided to have Eddie Curry and Zach Randolph as their leading front court, when they decide to have Stephon Marbury and Steve Francis at their leading backcourt. Like, what's made you stay loyal for this long and continue to increase your stress levels? I'm curious. This is a legitimate question. I'm curious. Like, why?
Calvin, I'm looking in the mirror right now.
are you pointing your index finger?
I am literally looking in the mirror right now, and I don't know. It's that hope. I think it's just the hope that one day we can get it right. Calvin, remember the fiasco with Donald Sterling and the Clippers?
Yes.
If you just accumulate like the body of work that has gone into it since Dolan has taken over the Knicks and has been running the Knicks, isn't it time to just like, listen, we really got to like intervene here. We got to send in a SWAT team or something like that and free this franchise. We got to oust you. Saddam Hussein's been ousted. Remember when they toppled that statue?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Sterling, when they're like, oh, we're just going to take your team away from you. What else does Dolan have to do? I feel like, because there's a community of this. There's very few Knicks fans. And I've been mocked for so long. But it's like, I've been... Calvin, I don't know, man. I don't know.
So basically, you're staying for the kids.
I am staying for Kristaps Porzingis. Yes, I am. Yes, yes. Because I feel like it's honestly it's borderline child abuse what's going on with Kristaps Porzingis right now. He's producing despite the circumstances that he's in. He's still putting up good numbers.
Yeah, so before we get to all that and list down the list of basically all the things that happened this year, which is really the crux of this podcast at this point. Okay, so let's try another angle here. Who would you compare Phil Jackson to?
Okay, so for all you Simpsons fans out there, you know Grandpa Simpson has this old friend that the bald-headed guy with the long beard, and he wears like Birkenstocks.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, he's the one that goes, catch you in the hallway, that's a paddling. Like that guy? Yeah, I remember him.
Staring at my paddling a boat?
Mm-hmm.
You know that's a paddling. That dude. You know what I mean? Grandpa's friend? Mm-hmm. That's who I compare Phil Jackson to. Why? Because he's old, he doesn't say much, he's angry, and sometimes you see him, sometimes you don't, but he's still getting paid. He gets $1 million a month. And he only has to work, 6 months out of the year? Well, what's the NBA season? From November to, it ends in when, April?
And in fairness to Phil Jackson, he probably works like 4 months out of the year. But go on.
Actually, as long as Phil Jackson's there, the Knicks season is only 5 months.
True.
November, and it's done in April. He gets $12 million for 5 months worth of work, of which he doesn't even work that hard. And when he is there, he could be asleep. Who knows?
He's just basically being paid $12 million to sit down and watch basketball and interfere with all sorts of progress, badmouth his assets, depreciate his own stock, and then try and sell it on the market.
You look at, well, number one, I think I mentioned this in a previous podcast before, but there were pictures of him sleeping on one of the buses in New York on his way home, like literally a 6'9" older man doubled over on a on a bus bench sleeping. They've caught him napping at games, apparently. But I mean, that's a whole other thing altogether.
Calvin, it just sums up. I'm telling you, it starts from the top. And the only reason that the Knicks went after Phil Jackson was because that same day or that same week, Knicks fans were planning like a protest outside of MSG to try and force Dolan out. Not that anything was going to come of it. It's his team, right? They were staging like a protest, basically complaining about the Knicks. And they're going, like, there was this little like movement, like an Occupy movement, basically that was forming on that to be done in front of Madison Square Garden. Dolan got word of it, started shelling out money to Phil Jackson. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that actually.
Okay, that factual, 100%. There's so much anger in Knicks Nation, and what he did is, oh well, get Phil Jackson. The first big, you know, the. I don't know. I don't care how much money it costs. Just give me Phil Jackson. So you go out and get Phil Jackson. To do what? He's never been a president or general manager before. No, he's just a president, right?
Yeah. But you know what, though? Initially, when it happened, I didn't think it was that bad of a move. And the reason why I say that is because you see some coaches and some people get opportunities to be put in a position of power where not just being a coach, but being either a general manager or president, like you've seen it. And with the resume that he's built up for the last 20 years before that, you know, winning like 11 titles or whatever it was, if you want to take a chance at him to see if he can do the job, I mean, it's not the worst decision in the world. I don't think it was like, it wasn't like hiring like Rob Babcock to be your GM. You know, I don't think it was the worst move in the world. It was at least worth a try. Like hearing the move, you're like, okay, obviously he hasn't been in this position before, but, you know, depending on the type of people he puts around him, you know, it could work, you know, and obviously you have to give it some time because the team was, they were at a low point again, right? So there's going to take a little bit of time to build it back up and, you know, all that. So I'm like, you know what, it's worth a shot to see. I didn't think it was that bad of a signing, to be quite honest with you, at least at the time.
Calvin, what do you think now?
Oh, no, now it's horseshit, 100%. Obviously, the Knicks had a very tumultuous year. We can discuss one of like 5 points here if you like. So here's some of the things that happened with the Knicks this year. You can pick from any one of these points here that we could discuss on. So they started the season 14-10. That wasn't too bad. Phil Jackson versus LeBron, the AKA the posse scandal. Derrick Rose disappearing for a game. The Charles Oakley arrest and takedown at MSG. Noah being suspended for 20 games. Derrick Rose tearing his meniscus again in his knee. And, well, last but not, certainly not least, Phil Jackson doing everything humanly possible to get rid of Carmelo Anthony. That part I actually find hilarious. You should probably start with that first, actually. Because, like, to be honest, Kev, that situation right there, it's like an episode of Seinfeld. Remember that episode of Seinfeld? I mean, I don't watch the show anymore, but the episode from Seinfeld where George was working at this place and they thought they hired him because they thought he was disabled, but then it turns out he wasn't, obviously. So then that's right. So then the company tried to do everything in their power to get rid of him, whether it was poisoning his food, turning up the heat in his office, changing the locks. Like to me, that's what Phil Jackson is trying to do to Carmelo Anthony. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. Like, honestly, it just keeps escalating. To me, it's like a I would say it's a clown show. It's just it's comedic for me when I watch it. Every time Phil Jackson comes on, or there's something in the news with Phil Jackson, I'm like, man, what else is he gonna say, Park Carmelo? Now, like, honestly, at this point, I'm just expecting to start spreading rumors that he's the one sleeping with Lala, and he's like, you know what? she really does taste like Honey Nut Cheerios. You know,
okay, you're wrong on a couple levels. You're pushing the envelope. But starting with, okay, if you want to talk about that, I'll say this. I'm thoroughly convinced that if we didn't live in the internet era, the rest, but we would be convinced that Carmelo Anthony is a problem in New York. Because it would be management complaining about an employee and going to the press about it, right? But for that, the star player, the mentor, for Kristaps Porzingis, the only person basically that came out and said, I want to play in New York in the past couple years, not just because you ushered them a bunch of money, but he actually believed in the city, and you rewarded him by giving him a contract extension and giving him a no-trade clause, and then you turn around and try and, like, blame him and shame him out of town like he's Cersei in Game of Thrones? Shame, 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 ringing the cowbell? Listen, man, bad on Phil Jackson, bad on the franchise, bad on Dolan for not saying anything, bad on Dolan for not sticking up for Carmelo Anthony, bad for Carmelo Anthony for staying there.
But what's Carmelo's problem, though, in this case? And the reason why I say that is because, again, like, they clearly don't want you there anymore. So, I and it's funny, I get both sides of it, because if honestly, the average person, and I would probably do this too, I would start looking at my options and be like, no, listen, like, what other team can I play for to just either be happy or have the best chance of winning a title? So in one aspect, and we spoke about this before, I don't feel sorry for Carmelo, because Carmelo didn't have to come back to New York. Like, Carmelo could have left. If it was about winning, he could have went to Chicago. He could have went to Houston. He could have went anywhere else. He didn't have to come back to New York. He came back to New York because, A, he loved living in the city, but more importantly, they pay him the most money, and he wasn't going to get that contract anywhere else. So when he made that decision, it was – honestly, I don't knock him for making that decision. If he wanted to sign because they paid him the most money – you're a professional athlete. Your window isn't open for that long. Sure, take it. Do what you got to do. But the stuff I hate is when you do that, and then afterwards you start complaining about, well, how come this team isn't winning? Or how come we're not closer to the title? What's the direction here? I don't get it. But, like, you saw the mess. Everybody saw that mess in 2014 when you was a free agent. But you still decide to sign back on for it anyway. You can't complain because, you know, like there's stains on the couch now. Like, you knew there were stains there to begin with.
It depends what his priority was. If his priority was getting money, he can't just say, yo, I'm out to get paid. Right? He has to say that he wants to stay in New York. And yes, I do blame him for part of this, because he could have left easily and been like, and no one would have blamed him.
No.
Been like, look, I tried, but This is not the right place for me. I gotta take my. I only have 4 or 5 years left. I don't want to waste my years. I don't want to pull a Kevin Garnett. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. KG stayed in Minnesota too long. Went to Boston to get his ring. You know, so I don't blame. I wouldn't have blamed. Anyone would have been like, you know what? I gotta leave. I got things to do in my career, man. I can't do this. But that Foot Locker commercial, where, like, those teenagers were trolling him for not winning a championship or whatever like that, and he went along with the script. That wasn't a funny commercial. That was stupid. No, seriously, Calvin. It's stupid. You can't say that your priority was, you know, you want to win in New York. You see the roster.
Yeah.
That's not Jrue Holiday. That's Justin Holiday. Another, like, a different brother. No, you're not winning a title, man. Listen, if you show up to training camp and you're like, okay, my focus is winning a championship, and you look there and there's Jose Calderon and Louis Amundsen, you're like, no. Get me out of here. Wave my no-trade clause. I got to go. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, at some point. Like, honestly, it all boils down to, I mean, the easiest trade that's on the horizon for them right now is flipping him to the Clippers for Blake Griffin. That's probably, like, the easiest thing for them to do. But mind you, Blake Griffin is a free agent, so he doesn't have to do any signing trades. So that option is probably not on solid ground right now. But
why do I want Blake Griffin?
Well, yeah, because you guys will ruin Blake Griffin. I mean, he's already pretty brittle as it is. Whatever solid structure he has left, you guys will take it down. That is true. Sorry, again, that's my fault. I apologize, because, again, this is for you to vent and be in your safe space. So I shouldn't be knocking him like this. But, but honestly, when you look at some of these moves, man, like, it's you see why they're not in the playoffs.
The one thing the Knicks need to do, if ever the Knicks make a trade or sign a free agent, it should always be conditional that a DeLorean comes with it. Because all these people, a DeLorean is the vehicle that they use in Back to the Future for those people that don't get the reference. But the only reason I say that is because anytime the Knicks make a move, they get players past their prime. So if you're gonna trade me, if you're gonna trade Steve Francis or Stephon Marbury or give me Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, you know what I mean? Give me a DeLorean as well, so I can go back in time and get the right version of these star players, not the shells that they used to be.
Should be mandatory in the contract. The only negotiation period. What color should the DeLorean be?
Exactly. Don't just trade me for like a name, which is what they're doing now. Listen, have you ever seen Brandon Jennings outside the 57-point game that he had? Have you ever seen Brandon Jennings hit a shot? But it's not found, right? And stop giving away players to championship contending teams for nothing. You're not a farm system for Cleveland. How are you giving away J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert for next to nothing? To LeBron, who you don't like. Why are you just giving them pieces and taking scraps back?
Safe space, Kevin. Safe space. You could vent out. It's okay. You can vent out.
How is this a $12 million decision? How do you keep your job after doing that? How do you do it?
And then it's funny because the thing I read today was, I read this wording on the Score app was basically Phil Jackson basically saying he wishes Carmelo success somewhere.
Okay, see this?
Like he's doing whatever he can because he knows again. You see the move what he's doing. Like he's trying to make sure that he gets under this guy's skin so much that finally he just flips his wig and says, you know what? Let me get the hell out of here. And what I was trying to say earlier was that with Carmelo, I can see him doing the flip side and being spiteful and saying, you know what? Nah, I'm going to stay here to the end of my contract. damn the winning. I love New York. Listen, I don't want to be that far away from Hot 97 and Power 105. I need my Breakfast Club in the morning. I need my Ebro. So listen, man, hey, I'm staying here, dog. And that's it. I love Manhattan.
At the end of this Carmelo fiasco.
So you could actually respect the spitefulness, to be honest with you.
I would too. I would show up in one of those old school I Love New York t-shirts. I would just rock it. Listen, at the end of this Carmelo fiasco, tell me, who on earth would want to go play for Dolan and Phil Jackson? The 29 other teams that are just watching, full of players just watching, and you see like the Spurs, how they'll turn like Simmons, or like what you name someone that you know they're basically like MacGyver. They can turn whatever scraps and recycle. They can turn a paperclip and a toothbrush into a helicopter and fly away to safety and fly to championship territory. The Knicks will basically just set their own plans on fire and burn the place to the ground.
Like the Knicks will take that Lamborghini and have it running like a beat up Honda Civic by the time it's done.
You know what? Swap out that Lamborghini engine for me, please. Put in you have an 87 Corolla? Yeah. Put an 87 Corolla motor in there for me, please. Sure, I'll give it to you for free. No. I'll pay you $48 million over 4 years for it. Sure. Does that not sum up the Knicks?
It literally does. It literally does. But you answer me this. Yeah, answer me a couple of questions here too. The whole situation with Derrick Rose missing a game, disappearing, I should say, for a game. Like, how does that even happen? Number one, and number two, how does he only miss a game? That honestly never made any sense to me. And I love Derrick Rose. I've been secretly wishing Derrick Rose magically gets some new knees and plays like the Derrick Rose of old, even though I know that's never happening. You know what I mean? I know that's never happening, but I try to defend them at all costs. But even this one, I'm like, man, just cut him. Like, why are you suspended? Just cut him at this point. You're not winning. He's only there on his last year. I mean, if he's going to disappear, I mean, mind you, I don't know what the situation was, but if you're going through a family emergency, as crazy as it is, you usually hitch head up your boss and say, listen, this is what's happening. I can't come tonight, or I can't come to work today because of this and this and this. And then you leave. That alone, I'm like, I was always under the school of thought where I'm like, just cut him. Why are you suspending him for a game too? Like, what's the point? Just cut him. Nobody knew where this guy was.
game with pay, probably, right?
Well, probably, yeah.
So for the Derrick Rose thing, here's something. I used to do telemarketing in Montreal, right? I used to call up people and try and sell them phone books or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Or yellow, if I couldn't make it into work, I'd call in. Be like, hey, I can't make it today. Okay, fine. Oh, I have a 24-hour flu. Can't make it. Oh, get better soon. Okay, cool. See you tomorrow. Whatever the case may be. I knew that I had to do that. I had the etiquette to call that in, and they were paying me $7, $6.45 an hour. And I didn't want to lose that opportunity. How is it that this guy is being paid X amount of $1 million, and he's just like, I'm out. Where are you going? I'm not telling anybody. And leaves the city. On a private plane, was it? Something along those lines. Anyway, you leave the city of your employment, you bounce, you come back, and they probably paid him just to sit on the bench and rest his knees before he blew him out later on in the season anyway. It's a joke. The franchise is a joke. It's basically a free-for-all. The inmates are running the asylum. Forget it. Forget it. I don't know who that was. That was Joakim Noah's chubby brother that was playing on the Knicks, creaking knees and all, shooting air balls, laboring down the floor, looking like he's in pain all the time. I don't know who that was. It's not Joakim Noah. No, it wasn't Derrick Rose either. Derrick Rose had some flashy moves, but I'm pretty sure I could average more assists than he did. Mm-hmm. He didn't make anyone better. He was just playing for money. Forget it. Team's a wash, man.
And poor Porzingis. The team, honestly, Kev, like right now, again, this is your safe space. I know I should be spreading positivity here and helping you get through this moment. But you got to address the bad before we get to the better part of it. The team really is like a viral infection. I'm just waiting to see who's going to sneeze on his face next and just contaminate his love for the game. And it already started because he skipped the exit meeting. Even for Porzingis, looking at those moves this year, I actually thought, and we did a podcast last year based around the NBA offseason, we ended the podcast basically just laughing about some of the moves the Knicks were making. But then as I thought about it, I'm like, you know what? If everybody's healthy and everybody shares the ball, they'll at least make the playoffs. Maybe an eighth seed, but they'll at least make the playoffs. If everybody's healthy. If, you know, a lot of ifs in there, but if everybody's healthy being the biggest concern. But on top of that, on top of everything else, the assets you have in Porzingis, you need people that are helping that development go further. First of all, you got somebody like Derrick Rose. Again, as much as I support him, like there were some games in there, Kevin, he's taking 20 shots. You know what I mean? I'm like, yo, this is Derrick Rose from 6 years ago. I'm like, how is this guy taking 25 shots in a game where he's got Porzingis and Carmelo? I'm like, this doesn't even make sense. I don't even care if he's hot, because it wasn't like he went like 23 for 25. You know, but and I'm like, and Porzingis is just chilling on the wings. And I'm like, how do you not hire at least, even if you're not going to get a superstar guard, at least get somebody to help push that guy's development forward? And Carmelo, obviously, he's never seen a shot that he didn't like either. So between those two guys, you got Noah, who's a hustling player. Well, obviously, that didn't work out, obviously, because of the whole injury thing. So you have somebody like Noah, who's was great maybe like 2 years before. His body really betrayed him this season. And then you got Courtney Lee in that fifth spot being the two guard, and he's not contributing that much either. In terms of Porzingis' development, this is the face of the franchise going forward. I think even Carmelo even knows that he's the future. But he still ain't getting the ball. So to me, I'm like, that's where I think the biggest failure was. It was like, I understand you're trying to make the run to put some butts in the seats to make the, you know, try to go after a playoff spot. But you got to do it in a way where it's like, okay, maybe we're going to try to attack the eighth seed a little bit. But at the same time, we got to make sure that this guy makes a leap in year two and he makes a leap in year three, you know, because I don't think he improved that much from his rookie year. And a lot of it had to do with the players that he was playing with. And who can blame him?
Well, A, you need the ball in order to be better, number one. He's not getting the ball. That's true. Number two, they're garbage. Number three, they're not a team. They're actually just employees wearing the same uniform. That's all it is. They're not a team. It's been the same culture since like 99. What do you expect? If your leader is a me-first guy, And then your point guard's a me-first guy. And then you have this guy like, hey, guys, I'm just here to play and have fun. I want to learn from you guys. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Grab my rebounds. I might find something for you. But I need to take my 26 shots. I need to shoot my 8 threes.
Last but not least, we still have to talk about Charles Oakley versus James Dolan.
Beef is when I see you. Guaranteed to be in ICU. One more time.
Now, I have to say, this is probably one of the most pathetic and despicable events to ever happen to the New York Knicks franchise. Now, with all the things that's happened to the franchise since the turn of the century, to me, I thought them not giving Ewing that courtesy call or a heads up to say that we're trading you was probably the top of my list personally. Just the fact that a legend, a Hall of Famer that put New York City on his back for 15 years had to find out on the radio like everybody else, like he was listening to the fan or something, that he was getting traded, you know, and it's been pretty much downhill ever since. But having Charles Oakley getting carried out of the arena like a drunken fan, I would say probably takes the cake.
I 100% agree. And I'll tell you what, man, I don't know if that counts as elderly abuse, but Charles Oakley is like 53 years old. And for some reason, he had to bring his... This, again, it starts from the top, right? But this has everything to do with Dolan and how he handles situations. It's like, you could give him, you could give him the most precious resource and you would find a way of ruining it. And that's exactly what the Knicks are. How he handled Charles Oakley, which is an ex-employee, how he's handled other ex-Knick employees is atrocious. The treatment of Patrick Ewing, post-Knicks history, they gave him a little tribute, but that's fine, right? He's out. They never brought him in as potential staff or anything along those lines, even when they've had horrible coaches where Ewing could obviously have been a better replacement. But Charles Oakley's just showing up there as a fan in the stands, and he has him removed, and then alleges that he may be battling alcohol or drug issues or something, or he might be battling substance abuse. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a low move.
It was absolutely embarrassing, and on top of that, like, it goes to the media, and their fans that are watching this, and it's being broadcast live, and he's pretending like nothing's ever happened. Then he gets called to the carpet, and when things got a little bit iffy, and, his publicist told him, hey, you got to do something here, figure this out, what can I do? Oh, let me get Latrell Sprewell and Larry Johnson. Quick, for a televised game. Quick, right? And he's sitting between them like they're friends. Sprewell doesn't like him. I don't know how much Dolan paid Sprewell to show up, but since Sprewell left the Garden and, like, verbally lambasted him during the entire game, Sprewell wasn't welcome back in Madison Square Garden either. But this is Charles Oakley, the man, like, I gotta say, man, growing up, the guys that embodied the Knicks like no one's business, there's something special about Starks, Oakley, Mason, and Ewing.
Yeah.
Those guys, if you have to carve a Mount Rushmore for New York basketball, like the grit of New York basketball, I don't think any of those guys actually grew up in New York, but they just embodied the city like, kind of like how the Bad Boy Pistons, you know, had the hearts of Detroit. It was exactly like that. And to treat, like, of all people, those guys are, like, sacred members. If ever you put the camera on them, I can guarantee you put the camera on Dolan at the Garden, fans will boo. If you put the camera on Woody Allen, fans will cheer. And he's done some things, too, right? But if you put the camera on Oakley or Starks or Ewing or, God rest, Anthony Mason, the fans will go crazy because they'll always salute the hard work that those guys put in. Dolan is so out of touch. What does he do? He calls in Larry, Curley, and Moe, who obviously had no idea. I think they knew who they were dealing with. That's why they needed so many of them, right? To carry him out. And Oakley, well, he went hard in the paint. Exactly how he played.
But you know what, though? Like, I agree with that. He's been banned from all the Knicks celebrations since he's been critical of the team. And I don't even know how long ago when he was making those critical comments. And don't get me wrong, like, he's no saint either. And the way he handled himself, even during that whole situation, I mean, he's not without fault in it as well. But And also, I'll add too that he seems to be, to, at least to me, that he's milking this for all it's worth. Every time there's a microphone in his face, he keeps, you know, he keeps talking about it ad nauseum. So, but at the same time, if I was him, I would too, especially considering that Dolan's still going forward with pressing charges against Oakley, even though he wants him back in the building. Like I said, it's a despicable situation though, and I swear to me the funniest parts of that whole event was, well, number one, listening to the crowd reaction with every slap and every push that Oakley did on the security guards. That to me was like I'll never stop like laughing at that part. Just every slap, like somebody was getting dunked on. Like that was just hilarious. And then
that used to be what the Garden was like when he was playing. you didn't get in the paint. You weren't dunking on Oakley. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But look, also remember, Dolan has a problem with people that are critical of his team because he can't handle the reality of the situation that he has no idea how to handle a franchise. It's, let's call it nepotism. He inherited the team from his father, but he has no idea how to handle it. Yeah. He gets the prestige of it because, you know, I'm in New York. My dad owned Cablevision, but he's worse than Joffrey. He can't handle power. You know what I mean? He's a tyrant. Remember, he fired Marv Albert, too, the voice of the Knicks. Marv Albert was the voice of the Knicks going back to when Willis Reed was playing.
Did he fire Mike Breen, too, at one point? Or did
yep.
He? Yeah, he got rid of him, too, right? He's a legacy kid. He's a legacy kid, so you know what it is.
Look, he may keep Clyde because, you know, Clyde's a legend. Clyde, you know, dishing and swishing, moving and grooving, bopping and chopping. That's fine. It's not that critical. But if you're like, you know what, at a certain point, how much can you take as a fan? You know, you're traveling, you're fielding these garbage teams. What do you expect? At a certain point, it will bubble over.
And also, that image, too, as well, of him sitting between Sprewell and Larry Johnson. I heard he tried to call Vin Baker, too.
I remember the Vin Baker one, yeah.
He tried to call Vin Baker, too. But it, that picture was funny. It was like, come on, guys, look. Here's my friends. We're all black friends here. Like that's the image I saw when he took that. It's like, you
know. That was the most bitter Oreo I've ever seen in my life. Larry Johnson seems like he was forced to do it because he was an employee, and Sprewell did it because, hey, well, I'm going to be on NBC. Please, Luttrell, look, I'll give you some money. I'm pretty sure Sprewell got paid for that appearance. The thing is, again, we talk about being detached. The thing with this guy is, and the reason why he's ruined the team, I don't think he understands that people love the players more than they love him. And the players, you know, the players played their hearts out for the city. They wanted to prosper in that city. Dolan just wants to win because there's more money for him. These guys wanted to win for New York. All different walks of life, but they all wanted to win for New York. And anyone that seems to, like, want to do something good for New York and for the Knicks, out of town.
Well, then, you know, I'll segue to this then. So I guess this is my final question for this part. So you're still a Knicks fan?
Damn it. I still love her.
She's cheated on me so much times. She's given me an STD. But you know what? She still has my three kids. I still love her.
Dude. She's had my heart for like 20-some-odd years, man. I got time. Look, here's what it is.
She just flashes that smile, puts on that hot dress.
Every couple of years, she has a, you know, there's a, yeah, every couple of years, there's a little glimmer of hope. You know, but I've been seduced with the fact that I want New York City to win. Other franchise, I don't think there's anywhere else that you can win where, like, you're basically going to be immortalized in New York. Because for some reason, Joe Namath is still getting free meals in New York. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he, like, what was it, 40, 50 years ago?
Right.
Is that possible? Mark Messier is more an Oiler than he is a Ranger, but he won for New York. Immortalized. Jeter, immortalized. A-Rod, not so much. But, you know.
Eli, immortalized?
I don't know
about that, yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, there's some players, like, they'll still love Daryl Strawberry and Doc Gooden. No matter what, because you won for us. And, like, These are all the other franchises except for the Jets seem to have some sort of prosperity associated with them. The Knicks are just like, they've... My heart's still there, man. My uncle was a Knicks fan. I really got into basketball rooting for the Knicks. I'm not a bandwagon jumper. I do drink because of I blame it on my Knicks fandom. But, you know, it's my team. I don't expect them to win, but it would be nice if they did. But they won't, as long as this guy's owning them. I'll go on the record for saying this. As long as Dolan is running the show, the Knicks will not have the intelligence necessary to win a championship. He doesn't hire the right pieces. He has no idea what he's doing. He's just a guy that's given the most valuable toy in basketball, like, you know, in professional basketball, and he's bumbled it 100%.
And unfortunately, though, that's the life of a diehard sports fan, man. You end up living and dying just with the success and the failures of your team. You know, and I mean, I can kind of relate a little bit just because as a 49ers fan, I mean, you know, growing up, at least we won titles, you know, as I mentioned before. At least we won, you know, like four. I remember winning, you know, as a fan, winning four or five titles. But there's been a long period of time of just bad management throughout the whole part of the 49ers, except for a few years ago, which, you know, it was almost like it's almost like we had like our aha moment. Like we're back playing in the playoffs. We got a Super Bowl, we went to a Super Bowl. You know, we almost made another. Kaepernick was on the rise. You know, and all of a sudden, like we're back here looking at the number two pick. We're expecting us to, you know, to fist pump for that again. And I don't know. I don't even know what the hell happened. You know,
I can tell you what happened. Bad management.
Yeah, exactly.
Harbaugh had a one vision of what he wanted to do. Bad management. Some people in suits decide that they have a better idea what they want to do. Harbaugh took his toys and he went and he bounced. He got out of there, right? But that's exactly it. If you're not all on the same, if you're all on the same page, you have San Antonio. If you're not on the same page, you're the Knicks. But imagine that the Clippers have been outperforming the New York Knicks. The jokiest joke of franchises. And they have more of an upside and more, even with Doc Rivers doing what he's doing, they still have a better outlook than the Knicks do.
Well, the scary thing about it is, though, Kev, the Knicks is still the richest franchise in the NBA, and they're probably one of the highest, wealthiest teams in sports. So, I mean, getting rid of Dolan ain't going to be happening anytime soon. Now, I was going to say, the one thing we can agree upon, though, is... In terms of bad management, our beloved Montreal Canadiens. I hope to God that Subban wins that Stanley Cup this year. I've never rooted harder for somebody to stick it to my own team more than I have with Subban. And I think we can both agree with that at least.
Dude, I am with you 5,000%. The kid that wants to prosper in Montreal gets yet again run out of town by bad management that can't see the big picture. Just because they're wearing a suit, we give them a little bit more. We give them a lot more credit than they deserve.
Yep, absolutely.
I'm all Nashville. I want Nashville versus Ottawa. I want PK to win the Stanley Cup, celebrate, and bring it to the Children's Hospital, and then rent one of those Caravana floats. And just go around that GM, Pierre Bergevin, or whatever his name is. Just take a Caravana float around his house for 8 hours. That's it. Just circle the block and hoist the cup.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's the way it's playing out. It's like Patrick Roy all over again. Salute to him, man. I really want him to stick it to the Canadians real badly, man. I really do. All right, anyways, let's move on. All right, so let's move on to LeVar Ball and the plans that he has for, you know, the Big Baller brand, which right now, obviously, the choice of topic everybody's talking about is the shoes. Now, if you ask me what I think of LeVar, I think he's a jackass. You know, someone who's trying to get the most eyes on his family. Honestly, I think one of the things that rubbed me wrong is just the way that he swaggered onto the set of First Take when he brought Lonzo with him. It just tells me that he's also trying to be a celebrity. Like, it's just, I don't know, just something about it just, it just made me sick to my stomach a little bit. I always see that gif all the time. But with all that said, though, I'm actually on board with the idea of thinking outside of the box and creating their own shoe. Now, all the future success, of course, hinges on the success of Lonzo. So if he comes in and he takes the league by storm, not just being good, but great, this could be something that takes off, especially if the sneakerhead culture embraces the shoes.
LaVar Ball is smarter than we give him credit for. We live in an age of social media, and we live in an age of here today, gone tomorrow. But I can't tell you anybody else that has done the sports media circuit as frequently, and how people hinge on his every word, they're hanging on his every word, and they care about what he has to say. You can turn on Undisputed, you can turn on First Take, you can turn on Sports Nation, you can turn on anything on ESPN or Fox, and at any of them, if ever they have the chance to have him on, they're going to have him on. Oh, he thinks he's better than Michael Jordan? Let's have him on. Oh, he could take LeBron? Let's have him on. Oh, is he? He's launching a shoe? Let's have him on. The thing with LaVar Ball is he knows how to create a headline. He knows how to capture people's attention. He's kind of like call him Black Trump, because he's enterprising. And he's succeeding despite what most logical people expect. He shouldn't be doing this. It's working. Trump was grabbing him by the... He shouldn't be winning. He won. Right?
Well, you know what? Yeah, and you're right, because pricing it at $495 is absolutely ridiculous, but by sharing that price point, he bought himself about $50 million worth of free publicity. Something that, you know, according to Dal Rovell of ESPN, that Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, all these major shoe companies would literally pray for. So at the time that he dropped the price point of the shoes, he was the number one trending topic in the world just regarding the shoes. And to me, it's absolutely insane, but it shows you the impact that he's having right now. He's trying to change the business of doing sneaker deals. Now, I think personally, others may follow that same path, but I think it can also send a bad precedent if sneakers start being priced higher and higher than they already are. Like, the average kid can't afford a pair of $100 to $200 shoes as it is. Now, imagine $495. But at the same time, it creates a talking point and shock value. So you're right. Like, he knows what he's doing at this point.
Sneakers are overpriced already. We realize that. How much you want to overprice them by, that's determinant on the market. Because honestly, if Jordan came out with an exclusive pair of sneakers for $500, people would line up and buy them. Because he's established and he's Jordan. But people will find a way to get them, right?
True.
Let's be honest.
Well, like the Yeezys, right? Because the Yeezys they're supposed to be like $400 or whatever they are too. But really, you keep hearing the price point being like $1,000, and people are going crazy, you know, killing themselves over them shoes too.
And Kanye hasn't made a noteworthy layup I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But he made some songs, so he can tell me he can dictate how much he wants to charge for shoe wear. Which makes no sense to me, but that's a topic for another time. LaVar Ball is doing something that few men have the chance to do and capitalize on. He has high publicity, he has merchandise, and this is black enterprise that he's doing right now. How many people, you know, designing their own shoe and coming up with their own clothing or whatever else the case may be? Like, he's gone, he's making some very interesting steps. And it's not just for this generation, it's not just for this draft, you know, it's for future generations. Where it's like, okay, well, listen, you can take your future into your own hands. And of course, always, the establishment is always going to try and buck you back down until you fall back in line, right? But he's like, no. I'm going to take control of my own destiny. Yeah, $500. Is it overpriced? Don't buy it if you don't want to buy it. It's fine. But he's actually doing, like, he's doing what a lot of us wish we could do. He's looking at the system. He's saying, okay, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like that, I'm going to reevaluate. If he doesn't like something, he's changing it. I can't say I'm on board with him 100%, but I salute what he's trying to accomplish. And he's a brother doing it on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the one thing that we might not like, and I've flip-flopped with this guy a couple times, so I'm like, who is this idiot on my screen? Like, who is this guy? I've been there. But I'm like, here's a black man in the United States that, you know, you got to filter out forget what he's saying, think about what he's doing. Marketing, merchandising, has his own shoe, has a production deal for the shoe. He's redefining how it's done.
Okay. But at the end of the day, though, it's all about, well, two things. Number one, it's all about how the shoe performs. And it's all about, of course, how Lonzo does on the court. Because, again, if Lonzo is a superstar right out of the gate, then, especially now at this situation and point in time where, you know, because we're doing this a day after the draft lottery, and now they're going to, the Lakers getting the second pick, which more than likely they're going to take Lonzo Ball. So him being in the second biggest market, you know, for second biggest TV market in North America, LA is the flagship franchise for the league. It's always better for NBA business that the Lakers, the Celtics, the Knicks, and even the Sixers are successful. You got Magic running the franchise, who's going to do everything in his power to make his first draft pick successful, especially one that's made closer to his image, at least on the court. You know, it's right there for the Ball family to succeed. Now, the other part of it that's crazy too, going back to something that I heard Darryl Revelle say, is that for normally to make shoes, it takes about 6 months to actually make a shoe, which is why they're setting up their orders now. Plus, he's not making the excess of sneakers, so he's only making what's ordered. So it lowers the overhead. So it's a very expensive business now to battle big companies with. But depending on who he can get to back him, especially if he can get some sort of billionaire to come and back him, coupled with his son's production, like, this work. But again, you know, the downside is if he doesn't have that skyrocketing start to his career right away, or that first year and is taking over the league, you know, or if he sucks or he gets injuries related to his feet, especially, or worst case scenario, if he makes a cut and his toes end up sticking out of the shoes, like some of the cheap shoes I used to have, you know, growing up in elementary school, then, you know, this whole thing is a disaster.
That's worst case scenario. Best case scenario is here's a father that believes in his sons. He believes in his son's performance and their abilities, and that comes to light. Yeah, he's not crazy. This man is actually, like, he's actually a basketball factory. He's producing mass talent. He's producing amazing talent. And then watch what would happen for the second son, and then the third son. And they would already have their mark. Like, this could be huge. It could. It's high risk, high reward. Absolutely.
It's very high risk. I said it's very high risk because, again, we don't know if his sons are going to be as good as Lonzo. He's saying that they are, but we don't know that.
Well, we don't know yet, but the man's already put together a business plan that he wants, you know, that he believes in. And granted, look, there are some coincidences, but a lot of what this guy is saying is coming to fruition. Now, also notice this. This is what I noticed. When he was first, like, doing the media circuit and whatever like that, you notice how he was always just showing up in, like, Big Baller Brand t-shirts or long-sleeve tees or, you know what I mean? He was showing up with, like, the colorful stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you noticed ever since he launched the shoe, now he's showing up and he's wearing suits and ties and whatever? Have you noticed that he's changed his attire? Like, he's to be taken a little bit more seriously?
Well, I mean... Some of the Kanye-esque rants is, you know, it's I don't know if people are taking him that serious just yet. All the way serious, I should say.
But he's refined his wardrobe. I mean, okay, let's think about it this way. We're all hip hop fans, right? Why is it that Jay-Z coming out with a sneaker, or 50 Cent coming out with a sneaker or clothing, and charging $200 for a pair of jeans? state property jeans or whatever the case may be, right? Or G-Unit or shady clothing. Why were we just dishing out money for it? Like, you make music. You know nothing about fashion, right?
Mm-hmm.
We weren't all up in arms. We were lining up to buy it. The only issue I may have is that he has one shoe, one price. And I mean, I would have done like a tier system, have something priced according to market, have one design that's, you know, that's for most people. They okay, you want to pay $150 to $250 for a pair of shoes? Fine. Well, I have a shoe for you in that market. Then I'm going to have an elite shoe that my son would wear, and that one's $500. But you know what I mean? I'd have it like a little bit, I'd have it different. But I wouldn't have everything go, I wouldn't go from like the rags to riches price point right away. Like, you don't know who I am, and now all of a sudden, here's a $500 shoe or a $1,000 shoe in a case. Like, I wouldn't go that, there's nothing in between. Like I said, high risk, high reward, right? So he doesn't believe, I guess he doesn't believe in middle ground?
No.
And he just wants, like, he's swinging for the fences. Hey, his life.
But you know what, though? To touch on your point that you made about the Jay-Z and 50 Cent and all them guys, regardless of them getting themselves into fashion, they had a credibility of having a lengthy career of success. Well, I shouldn't say 50 Cent at that point, because, I mean, he was probably out for, like, his star turned really happened within a year, and he capitalized on everything. But, like, guys like Jay-Z and even, like, Eminem or other people like Puffy and everybody else, their main craft was they had a legacy of credibility before they started branching out to different things, or at least a period in time where their stuff was credible. Going into this situation, we don't know how this kid's going to turn out. Like, by all projected points, he's, and I've seen him play a couple of times, he's a great talent. So, I mean, he's projecting to at the very least be an all-star. He's going to be a game changer. I think he can definitely be that guy. But we still don't know yet. We have no idea. I mean, he could be Penny Hardaway. He could be, you know, get some sort of knee injury. He could be out in 3 years. Or, you know, he can be the next wave. You know what I mean? We don't know. But that's the thing. But to stamp that and say, you know what, $500, pay for this now, this kid's going to be the man, and it's his father saying that. Yeah, it doesn't, you know, it's not going to make you rush to the cash. Like, yeah, you're right. Jordan can do that because he's had an established career for over 30 years. You know, Ball's 19 years old. We have no idea. The last image we saw of Lonzo Ball was him getting his ass kicked by De'Aaron Fox. It's not established yet. You know what I'm saying? So for them to price that point, I get it. And I actually think it's kind of smart, because you're gambling on the fact that, once again, if this kid takes off, then you keep that price point there. And now everybody's coming rushing to you, and they don't care what the price point is. So that part of it is again, it's the high risk, high reward point of it. Again, we're not going to know until he steps on the court. You know, so at the end of the day, it's all planning. It's all great design. And, you know, like, you're planning, you know, the last 15, 20 years for these moments to happen. But, you know, again, it's all dependent on what Lonzo does. If Lonzo just comes out and he's okay, if Lonzo comes out and he's D'Angelo Russell, and I don't mean because, you know, we snitched on Young and all that crap, but if he comes in and he's just an okay player, this is a disaster. So, like I said, it's an interesting story, and we'll definitely see where this takes us. Going forward real quick, as I mentioned before, the draft lottery happened last night, as of this recording. I know you have a hot take on this conspiracy theorist, this conspiracy viewpoint of how the lottery fell. So I'll back up and let you talk for about a minute or so. Go ahead.
Thanks for prefacing it with conspiracy theory, making me seem like I have like a foil helmet on or something like that.
Don't you? Look, it's a new era foil cap, isn't it?
Look, thank you for the forum. Here's what I have to say. I think that there's some shady business going on with the NBA draft lottery. I think that there are a lot of, it's not a coincidence. That has been going on with the NBA lottery since going back to, like, Patrick Ewing. There are a couple cases where it's like, this is, like, with the NBA as a whole. Think about it, Calvin. Just a couple incidences. 85, Knicks get the first pick. They draft Patrick Ewing, which he goes straight to New York City. Boom, great for the NBA. But let's think about, I don't know, September 10th, 2001, Michael Jordan announced he's coming back to play for the Washington Wizards. Who wins the lotto that year? The Wizards do. Okay. Coincidence, I guess, just where the ping pong balls fall. 2003, this kid out of Akron is supposed to be the next big thing. Who wins the lottery? Cleveland Cavaliers. 2008, this kid out of Chicago is supposed to be the next big thing. Who wins the lottery? The Chicago Bulls. They get Derrick Rose. 2011, Cavs get Kyrie Irving. All right. 2012, the New Orleans Oklahoma City. Was it New Orleans Oklahoma City?
They're bouncing back. It was just the Pelicans at that point.
And in 2012, shortly after, there's a final confirmed sale, and there's an owner for the New Orleans Pelicans. They win the draft, and they get Anthony Davis, potential franchise-changing player. Right. 2013, Cavs get the first pick. They get Bennett. 2014, Cavs get the first pick again. They get Wiggins. LeBron writes a letter, says he's coming home. His letter does not include Wiggins or Bennett. Everyone just turns a blind eye. Okay, fine. There's very, very prophetic. By the time he gets there, Wiggins and Bennett are gone. Okay, it's fair. 2017, there's a bunch of turmoil with the Lakers. The Lakers suck. Post-Kobe, they need something. And there's these rumblings about this kid in Chino Hills. So Magic makes his power move, brilliantly done, and ousts Jim Buss, was it?
Yeah, Jim Buss.
Yeah. Magic makes his power move, ousts Jim Buss, takes over the Lakers, basically, but he has to have his pick protected. LeVar Ball is talking about, my son's only going to play for the Lakers. Okay, he's wearing gold, and LeVar Ball is wearing gold and purple and gold, big baller brand clothing. Just wishing it into existence. Magic takes a trip to New York, but it's all in print. My son will only play for the Lakers. He's been saying that from time, right? Magic's like, we need to get our pick. Luke Walton actually goes on TV and says, Magic's assured me that we're getting our pick. Lo and behold, we watch this farce of a draft lottery, and what happens? The pick is protected. We're all as good in Lakerland for 2017 and 2019. They get their pick. It's all protected. Magic Johnson does it again. Why is it? I'm just going to ask this to everybody listening. Why is it, if you're going to have a draft lottery, how is it you're going to have a lottery, but you're not going to televise the lottery itself? You're just televising the results. I find that suspicious. If you're going to have a lottery, have the ping pong balls there, have them show up, and let us see it. Do it for half an hour. We'll tune in, but at least we'll see it. We'll see it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just this guy opening envelopes, telling you who won this, who won that. I'm like, please. How are we supposed to know?
My only, you know what? My only hot take that I'll say on this, well, and actually, I'll touch on your point first. All your points are very valid, mind you. I totally agree with that part of it. The only thing I'll say is I'm not 100% sure how much conspiracy there was last night, only because, I mean, it was a 50-50 chance they can keep their pick. You know what I mean? So, like, it was like one of those things that, like, if they were, like, projected to, or sorry, if they had like the seventh best chance of landing the first pick or what have you, or landing the second pick, and then they ended up, you know, climbing in the top three, then I think for sure I'd be right with you. But just the fact that they were already top three and they landed second, I can see where you're coming from, but I mean, you know, there's also the other side of it where you can be like, man, it just fell the way it fell. You know, it wouldn't surprise me at this stage. But The only hot take I'll say is just this. Watching Boston get the number one pick should be further evidence that Billy King should never get a GM job again. Now, listen, man. I mean, you know, I don't want to rehash the whole Brooklyn thing. And I'll admit, some of it goes to the some of it falls on the feet of Prokhorov as well, because he, you know, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, because he put that timetable, that championship timetable, on everybody in that franchise when they moved to Brooklyn. So it might have hastened a lot of bad moves, per se, you know, on the average person. I agreed, but just watching King's track history with the AI era 76ers and how we just capped out that franchise, paying guys like Kenny Thomas multi-millions of dollars, you know what I mean, like players like that, and like overpaying role players to the point that they got capped out and they couldn't afford any real players. You know, so watching that again, it's like, yo, you just stick to, like, anything else. Community service, you know, do broadcasting, NBA TV, just anything else. Don't run another team again. You can't do that.
Okay, here's a question then. Who would you rather hire, Sam Hinkie or Billy King, if you had a team?
I was not a fan of Sam Hinkie. You know, I always ripped him for basically stealing money from these fans for the last 3 years. But I understood the move. You just basically tank out until you get real high assets, and then you start to try to win. So, like, now it's you know, like, he got fired, and now it's actually, you know, coming to fruition for him, at least the legacy of him. So he's probably going to get another job at this point, especially if Philly ends up being really good, which, I mean, by all case of points, there, you know, as long as they can stay healthy, that's looking like that's going to be the path they're going to take. But I would probably give Hinkie a shot, as much as I don't like him, more so than King. Because, again, King gave up Brooklyn's whole future. He gave up their whole future. Like, look, even next year, Boston has the right to swap their picks with Brooklyn again. So if Brooklyn ends up getting the number two pick, guess who has it? And next year's draft is nice. So
Billy King basically read the Isaiah Thomas manual.
Yeah, basically.
As to how to run a franchise.
Right.
How to mortgage your future. Go figure. You talked to me about it, that management. We were talking about it, that management. Fine.
You know, yeah, you know what I mean? He's in chapters right now, like, huh. How to Succeed in Business by Bernie Madoff. Like, you know what? I think I should buy this. I'm going to buy it.
Somewhere Isaiah's like, yep. I like what you're doing. I like what you're doing. Don't forget to overpay for your bad talent. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so I'll ride with Hinkie. But with that said, to go back on the Knicks now, you guys have the chance, if these mock drafts fall where they're supposed to fall, to land two of my favorite players in this year's draft, Malik Monk and Dennis Smith Jr. Now, Dennis, honestly, would probably be a better fit for the Knicks, you know, if they could stop committing to this triangle. But all I ask is this, just as a basketball fan, and the fact that I love these two guys so much coming out of this draft, can you guys not f*** this up, Kevin? Like, is it possible that you guys don't contaminate him like you're trying to contaminate Porzingis? Just promise me. Just try not to mess this up. That's all I ask.
There's a certain point, Calvin, where it doesn't matter who we draft. They're gonna leave. They're gonna go, or we're gonna completely bungle the situation yet again. The Knicks, with managing young talent and developing young talent, is the same as like Tommy and Ghost trying to kill somebody. They're sloppy. They're just a bunch of like bumbling criminals, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'll leave fingerprints on the window. They'll have it. Hey, are you watching Lobos? No, I thought you were watching Lobos. Uh oh, and they have to chase them all friggin' day. That's how the Knicks are going to handle the draft. There will be a good talent on the board. The Knicks will bypass that talent, and they're going to go draft Rafael Arujo's brother from Spain. Or Rafael Arujo, or something along those lines. They're going to find some garbage foreign talent that they're going to bring over. The fans are going to boo. I mean, when's the last time you went to the draft of the Knicks actually, and the Knicks fans were actually cheering for the pick?
Well, I think this year could be the year. It's actually one of the rare drafts where your team can actually be in the eighth spot, and you're still laughing because a talent just fell into your lap. It's one of those really rare situations. And on a positive note, just to end this off on a positive note, honestly, if you can land one of those two players with him and Porzingis, say, like I said, whether it's Malik Monk or Dennis Smith and Porzingis, the future can be very bright. Now, mind you, again, you know, I know whose hands you're leaving it in, but at least you have those pieces. I mean, which honestly is, and you know, you might laugh at this, but your team could actually still be the envy of others, you know, like, once again, as long as they don't screw it up. on that note, brother, thank you for coming on the app today and speaking your piece. Do you feel cleansed being able to talk, like, get this out about your Knicks and relieve that stress?
And your empty promises.
And should I leave you with any exercises to deal with? Any Knick-related stress going forward? Like counting backwards to 10, woosah, meditation, anything?
Just listen. Dolan is there. Incompetence will follow. So it doesn't matter. You could say anything that you want. Hey, you guys have a chance of, yes, we do have a chance of getting talent. What we do with that talent is going to be a travesty.
But yet, when your crazy girlfriend reaches out to Hannah and say, let's go home, you're still grabbing her hand to go home.
Look, at nighttime, when I roll over, you know, is right there in the bed with you, and you wake up, hey, babe, you up? You know what I mean? I'll still fuck with it.
Life of a fan. Thanks once again for tuning in to the AF Podcast today. And special shout out goes out to Kevin W. for sharing his pain. The confessions of a fan. Once again, coming back this summer, season 2 of The Stoop, a mini podcast series, will be here, which will be a list of short podcasts based on funny and insightful conversations. Make sure you stay locked in for that. I'll be re-releasing season 1 of The Stoop at the end of June to listen to some of those mini pods again. Also, the week after that, I'll be releasing the Boomerang podcast based on the 25th anniversary of the movie, which was incredibly casted, by the way. That was Eddie Murphy's big comeback to the movie game, and it featured a gang of legendary comedians, actors, actresses, and supported by one of the greatest soundtracks in movie history. We'll dive into that for sure. That should be out probably about the first week of July. Make sure you tune into that episode as well. Once again, to listen to more podcasts and blog write-ups, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Kevin W., this is Cal C., and you have just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next podcast, folks, peace.